3, 2, 1.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
Show's on.
Here we are.
Welcome to Naked Selmo Radio.
Yep.
We're on the air again?
We are here.
We are.
Oh, okay. You could have fooled me. Well, yeah, it's September morn, September Eve, September 5th. I have one less tooth in my head.
Yes, you do.
And there's two new babies in the world.
That's right.
There are. With no teeth.
With no teeth. I'm with them. Yeah. Trust me. I don't know what's going to wear off first, the Novocaine or your enthusiasm.
Oh, jeez. Are you still numb over there?
No, it's wearing off. My throat feels like there's like a Brillo pad in there.
Great.
But that is necessary evil. We'll discuss it somatically in a minute.
Good.
So let's see. Why don't we get the rundown on the babies from Jeb? Names and weight and all that.
These came in on September 1st at 12:41 and 12:42 respectively, which is the telltale sign of a C-section. And Andrew Anthony came out first, and he was 7 pounds, 7 ounces, 19 and 3/4 inches long. Mm-hmm. And then we had Nicholas Benjamin, who came along quick thereafter, and he was 19 and a half inches long and 6 pounds, 6 ounces, which I thought was nice symmetry. We had 7'7 and 6'6.
Yeah.
They're identical twin boys. They're doing excellent. They're now home, and we're not sleeping much. Other than that, we're having a great time.
Yeah.
And the APCAR scores were a 10, right?
They were 10s, yeah, right across.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff.
Yeah, they did
right
awesome. Particularly since the last three babies we had really didn't cry much at all, so it's actually, it was great to hear them crying.
I bet. And they're really cute.
Yeah. They are very cute, I have to say.
Very photogenic. Yeah.
Yep.
So how's Nora doing?
She's doing much better. I'm really surprised at how well she's doing. She's up, just took a Greta to bed. She's been going up and down stairs and I mean, not like, not running up and down stairs, but she is...
She's not doing a jig in the air?
Not yet. But for having her, her belly sliced open after 12 hours of intensely hard labor, I am still in absolute awe of that. I mean...
Yeah, it makes my tooth look like popping a zit. Yeah.
What's that?
I said it makes my tooth look like popping a zit.
Well, it's no picnic, but it's just... when you see the size of these babies and where they were and where she was trying to get them out and the length of time that she was really working on it, I mean, ugh.
I can't imagine.
Because these kids were almost like right to term, right? They're almost right to the due date, right?
They were 40 weeks minus one day.
Wow.
So they were at term and they were, but there was, they were kind of wrestling in there. They were sort of wrapped up a little bit, and Andrew's head was kind of face up, kind of to the side. He was just wasn't engaging right, and then we did have a little meconium. So, which for those of you who aren't familiar with baby speak, is their first poop, and it's not supposed to come until after they're out of the womb. So, it's a sign of stress, fetal stress. So, that was one of the big indicators of it was time to get moving and get them out of there. So, all said and done, though, they came out easy. And once we made that decision to get them out, and the thought of having this thing over with in 15 minutes I was thrilled as could be.
I bet.
Now we see it from a different filter. We had five home births, and now we went the other route and end up with a C-section. So it gives me a broader perspective of what people are going through and what people have to go through to bring these babies into the world, so I will be much less critical of somebody the next time. Well, not that I was critical, but, sometimes you go, oh, did the C-section really need to happen? And
yeah, well, sometimes it definitely does.
I'm concerned this one did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I had the odd circumstance of today finding myself in a pharmacy completely bewildered. Didn't know what I was doing over there after my radical tooth extraction for the abscessed crown.
Ugh.
And the pharmacist was asking me all these questions. I'm like, dude, I don't do this stuff. I said, I spend my time in the front of the CVS with the sugar and the salt.
That's right.
And he goes, you should consider yourself very lucky. I said, I opened my mouth. I said, do I look lucky?
Jeez.
So why don't you give us your tip of the week so you can go back to your family business over there and... Are you gonna stick around for some of the show, or what's your?
I think I'll stick around for. I got a couple of minutes. I was wanting to give you guys 15 minutes, and my tip of the week
good.
This week was kind of a simple one, but it was in respect to what we've been working on all this week, and that is for everybody who's listening. If you haven't already been to the website and you haven't already checked this stuff out, and if you have not listened to the intros and anything that we've written about the thematic companion, emotional makeover, this is the week to do that, because this is a really phenomenal program. And I don't mean to be too much, make the tip of the week an advertisement, but I'll tell you, I was using the thematic companion, all this week, and it's exceedingly valuable. And I find myself with certain. For me, it's just sort of I tend to exo. We talked about that a couple weeks ago or last week, I forget. When I get into a moment of stress, going exo for me is the one that works the best, because it gives me, like you said, it opens up a whole other toolbox and allows me to really take a look. So I just really revisit that stuff, and as soon as the thematic companion is available at stores near you and on our website, please make the call, make the purchase, because it is well worth it. 10 times the price.
I'm glad I rattled that off right before the festivities began, so you can listen in and prepare yourself for that water slide. my God. And really, anyone that's been watching our progress over the summer, we're really moving towards having a complete system up there for everybody that anyone wants to learn any of this work, the Universal Somatics work, and be able to break down their behaviors and look at their lifestyle from a much more sort of interactive perspective, and understand their identity has depth and all these other things that for the most part, it's not out in the mainstream. It's not something you're going to just stumble over in the news. And even though you every once in a while you see a story bubble up and no one explains it, but we found one the other night talking about sociofeedback.
Oh, yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
I might get into that in a minute. But it just that there's a lot of... undercurrents of the material we're covering, and I don't know how many times I mentioned other people's work in the course of just riffing on the different topics we go through in the program, but for the most part we have a very superficial grip on what emotions are and how they affect us physically and how that impacts our relationships and the life choices we make and the way we react to the moment, the stress and all the other things that come up. And the program kind of gives you a full A to Z look at that, and it gives you a strategy to personalize it too. So covered a lot of ground in that, and that's going to be available soon. And in the interim, get on there, take the self-profilers, look at the stuff that's up there. We just started a new season on Tuesday. We're now in the Somatic Fall Exo Week, so we are in the tool shed again this week. We'll talk about that in a minute. And now that the babies are here and Papa Jeb has a full six pack of kids, we can get into some somatic parenting maybe this fall, because he's going to be up to his hips in that. And
the infield is complete.
Yep,
there's a lot of material about the biological aspects of parenting that Bruce Lipton's been putting together. Maybe we'll get into that, as you get, more than your feet wet.
Maybe we should get Bruce in for a call.
Yeah, we could try. Heck, why not? He might want to hang out with us for a little bit, and he's somatically aware. He's pretty much on point. He's in the eco at large out there on the West Coast.
That would be fun.
Heard of Bruce Lipton. His book is called The Biology of Belief. Great book, which really gets into the aspect that your identity is an airborne signal. It's in the environment. People think their identity's in their head or on the refrigerator door or something. all my accomplishments. It's, you know, how I signed my tax return. And it's really a signal. And your cells and your body have are the only ones that have the receptors for it. So that's why when you go through transition and you get sort of knocked out of your status quo, knocked out of your rhythm, you lose the awareness of that identity vibration, and you start to act like, as people say, I was not myself that day, or I was beside myself. The language will tell you. And it's like, you know, a dip behind the clouds, and you have to be able to deal with that. And the tools we're talking about give you sort of a way to anticipate when that's going to happen so that you can tell what's going on in your environment and be able to move in sync with it. So,
oh, hey, Val, are you on the line right now?
Yep.
She's there.
Google, a man drove a bulldozer through a police station in Troy, New Hampshire. See if you can find that story. That's a great example of a guy who went way loco. And I wanted you guys to see if he'd follow or Eco, who went right off the deep end. But it's not really funny, but there's a good lesson in there of somebody who, his language, what he says, what happened to him, you know.
Troy, you said? Troy, New Hampshire?
Huh? Troy, New Hampshire,
I got
that
it.
Happened about.
I got it.
Got it.
Oh, my. Take a look at this guy. Oh, I wouldn't want to piss him off on a bet. Here you go. You got it, Mark?
I don't have it. No.
I'm going to send it to you. There it is.
When did this happen?
A week ago. Same day the critters came into the world there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, it was the day before that it happened.
Let's see.
When he actually did it.
Oh, that's you're right.
The paper might be published.
Yep. The day before.
Well, if you're contemplating, you know, driving to a police station and you don't have a bulldozer handy, you can call us here at 646-478-4847. We'll see if we can talk you down. And let's see what this guy did. Maybe he had an abscess and he couldn't wait anymore.
That'll do it.
Tell you what, they put me in that waiting room for 45 minutes. I hate being a patient. I am the most impatient patient, fidgeting all over the place. All right, ooh, look at this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And while you're reading that, I want to give a shout-out to my buddy there, Mike, over at Vermont Yankee. He's my Midnight Eco, listens into us. He's been listening to all our archive shows. I hope he might be on tonight. He might be listening live tonight. So, Mike, if you're there, shout out to you. But
hi, Mike.
This guy is an outraged philo. Look
That's
at that
what
left
I thought.
Eye. Yeah.
You see
the left
it?
Left eye is really, yeah, you can see it in the left eye. He's trying to exo in his right eye, and he's not going to make it.
No.
It's like as soon as he did it, he went, oh, boy, did I screw up.
And he's done it so many times. Apparently, he's a habitual motor vehicle offender.
Right. So this time he took it big. He went big. He says, you know what, if I'm going to get a ticket, I'm going to go steal me a bulldozer.
And here's the philo. Although he looks so angry, and he's trying to look angry there, I lost my kids because of the system. His cheeks flushed and his voice muffled by tears. I lost my house. I lost my truck, blah, blah, blah. So there you go.
Yeah, and this is something that if you study philo behavior for even 5 minutes, they're prone to a lot of violence because they don't have any checks in their system. They just escape. Exos are more like methodical and more premeditated and more sort of eclectic about like things like murder. But a philo, they lose it, they go postal and they kill everyone in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, oh my God, and then they give you the story afterwards.
Right.
So that's why when you're dealing with the domains and especially when I've worked some with EMS workers around here and some of the cops and some of the people that deal with the public, it's you got to be able to read what the person is independent of what they're doing and then be able to adapt to their behavior in the moment. So he's exoing when he's destroying the station. I'm going to take down this structure. I'm not going to have any regard for anyone's well-being or even his own. But he's doing it because he felt depersonalized, he felt dehumanized by all the things he was talking about here. So that's what was driving him. I can imagine the internal dialogue in his head when he said, get a bulldozer, run over the police station.
Yeah,
and he listened
to
it. So that's when you're dealing with incoherence, it isn't like, stupid is as stupid does. It's there's definitely a lot of sort of untold stuff when you see things like that. And the news is full of it. Every single day you just see more and more of it. And sometimes it's popular people. Sometimes it's guys like this. And They're just examples of what has to happen to change all that, and to change our collective behavior, you have to start being able to govern your personal behavior. And this guy, like you said, he's a repeat offender. He's used his car as a weapon, and he's apparently been arrested before on other stuff.
Yep.
Criminal mischief. He's got a whole track record here, this guy. So anytime you're getting in trouble a lot, that would be your eco button. And he's trying to fill in low coherence in all four domains.
That's right. We should send him out. We should send him out a copy of the Somatic Companion.
Yeah, yeah, I think
he's got the five. Yeah, everyone over there in sensitivity training. He says he knew it. He says I knew I wasn't going to get away with it. I just wanted to get attention to my situation. Wow, I needed to happen. The anger's been in me all along. That would be the onto dimension. So there you go. He's got all four covered.
Yep.
So he got angry. He exoed, and then he said, "Let me break the rules to get attention." Eco, and mm-hmm. all because I lost my kids in my house. Bye.
Yeah.
There you go. It's the grand slam of dementia right there, right there, alive and well in New Hampshire. Wow. So that's actually the example, Jeb. I guess
that was a good
you
one.
To go a long way to top that this week.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
But getting used to categorizing your behaviors and coming, what's driving it? The domains are driving your behavior. Just are you answering a signal that's in low coherence and a lot of noise and a lot of primitive, more kind of self-preservation type of signals, or are you getting more evolved physiology, more positive physiology from the high coherence end? And being able to filter out the low coherence end and being able to tune in the other ones is really what the whole nature of the work is, and that's what some of the new programs we're going to be putting out this fall are going to center on, so that you stop trying to label everything that's wrong with you and you start trying to get leverage on the things that are still strong with you. That's sort of the theme of this. So, all right, so we will let Jeb, I guess, put somebody's head down to a pillow other than his.
Yeah, no kidding. Story of my life. I just put two little ones, the two littlest ones I just got. Well, actually, Lukey helped me. I got to grab Kelly.
You spent a lot of time with that whole sleepy by thing.
Oh, it's a big part of my life. It's like from 7:30 on, you know.
Well, I got to have you call me one night and tuck me in on the phone. It'd be nice. Maybe I should get some rest.
Well, you know, I'll just do that when I get up in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. You just call me around 5:30 and just say, "Okay, Mark, it's enough. Go, you can go home then."
That was good.
Oh man.
Oh man.
All right, Jeb. So, thanks again. I guess we'll talk to you next week, and we'll definitely talk about getting some other things done. And best to everyone up in the wild and wander.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Send more pictures, will you?
I will soon.
Okay.
Send up babies with nice, blue outfits on and stuff.
Right.
All right, man. Hey, thanks, guys.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.
How about that?
Goes the silo.
And the babies were on the show. That's beautiful.
Yeah, my jaw's only three times the size of its normal dimensions after talking to Jeb. He's a soothing character.
Yeah.
And he seems to take a lot of stuff in stride, which is the Philo way, the way of the Philo, the Tao of Philo. They only focus on what's coming next. Here I am, what's next?
Yep.
Yep. I think they invented traffic. They just follow the next one, the next stagecoach over the hill, that kind of thing. Very ant-like in their behavior.
That's for sure.
Organized and diligent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd say ecos are more like, we're not like much, but we'll be an eco animal.
An eco animal? How about a ferret?
A single ferret can be eco, yeah. The ferret community, though, I guess is more onto to me. They're kind of insistent little rodents.
Yeah, maybe. No, they're pretty. They get in a lot of trouble. That's all they do is get in trouble.
True. I always put the ecos, with the like obnoxious animals. The screaming monkey types and the obnoxious birds, things like that.
Yeah.
Exotic animals. Yeah, exotic.
Yeah. Well,
fish with fins, the fly, and things like that. The weird-looking bugs that can do everything. That's usually the ecos. They're mutants. They're mutants of society.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in a move on Exo Week, and the senator, I guess, is reconsidering the guy we were talking about the other day over the sex thing. I just wanted to get to that before we started delving into my somatic tooth here.
Oh, God.
And again, if you have a more salient topic, you can always call us here. And interrupt this conversation, I guess. It's 646-478-4847. So And like I said, we've been encouraging you guys to call in. We've got a lot of lurkers out there that listen to the show, and I guess they get something out of it. We don't hear from you guys, but like at least emails and tell us what you want us to talk about and stuff.
Right.
And be a little more interactive. We talked about last week that a lot of the stuff we're going to be doing on here this fall is going to center on you, not on the world or not on our work in particular, but much more about how you're dealing with things and how you're able to express yourself, and so that we can give you advice on the air about it, because a lot of times, you know, we deal with it one-on-one with clients, she deals and Val deals with her students, and we all deal with family, friends, relatives, neighbors, all that stuff. And how many conversations do you have that during the course of a week that you walk away with not knowing why you were in it, what the meaning of it was, or what you should do as a result of it?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And those things, those suckers accumulate. And it's just, there's a lot of just, I guess, to go around the horn, and if you haven't really heard what the domains are, you don't know what they are, they're just perspectives. It's almost like default settings in the way your brain works. And there's four of them, and you basically go around the horn every 4 seconds you're alive and figure out which one of those four has the most clarity for you right now to operate in. And during the course of development, you figured out which one of those four was the most sort of naturally aligned with you, and you internalized it. So the first one is always to bond, and that means when you walk in the room, you're sorting for people, you're sorting for relationships, you're sorting for connection with other human beings. And that's the one that, you know, most of the society pretty much internalized, and that's why the nuclear family and all those things are very hard to knock out of the box. And then you get the ones that come out of that set that say, nope, it isn't human beings, it's just me, this human being, that I'm going to listen to. And you monitor your physiology and your belief system, and everything goes on in your inner world, and you're really not concerned with anything on the outside world that doesn't agree and support and enhance that. So that would be the onto perspective. So you got a philo perspective for bonding and an onto perspective for holding on to yourself and sort of just basically just relating to yourself. And then you have the two that are sort of the exceptions to the rule, the eco sort of perspective that is focused on the environment and the vibrations therein. So you walk in a room, what's the vibe? And you're not focusing on the people, you're focusing on the vibe of the room. It's a very close to bonding, but you're really sort of blending with the rest of the room.
Uh-huh.
And then you have your old friend, the exo there, which is the exception to most rules by design. And the exo perspective takes all three of those out and just focuses on structure. So it's a very generic, very, very black and white, very static view to take in. So it's like, it's very WYSIWYG in a way. It's very, what you see is what you get. So there's no depth, there's no search, there's just what is. And it just focuses on the structure. So you can go in the room, focus on the people, focus on yourself, focus on the vibe of the room, or just focus on the structure. And when you focus on the structure, you get what's universal about the other three. So the exo perspective, rare bird that it is, takes into account and embeds all the other three into it, and then takes what's salient, what's relevant, out of those three and uses it. It makes a tool or a system or some other type of way to communicate what's going on within that structure to other structures. That's the basis of society and all the infrastructure in it. We would not be here if not for the exos, but boy, you know, talking to them is another deal. They don't really want to talk to you. They would love to sort of have a connection to you cybernetically, but they're not particularly interested in the relationship stuff, because that's not part of the structure. That's part of the function, which is where those ecos come in with all their little pepper pot energy, and they try to stir up the mix and take the existing structure and try to raise its level of vibration, or sometimes we lower it a little bit because we like that. But overall, our dynamic is to move things around and be more effervescent, where the stabilizing force in the universe is more the exo perspective, which is to take the static view. So you have a dynamic view of the environment or a static view for exo and eco. So eco is dynamic and exo is static. Or you have the view of other people or the view of yourself with the philo and the onto. So there's the four. And like I said, you can look at anything through these lenses and figure out what's the clearest way to process any given situation in your life. And that's why when it comes to emotions, most people have a problem putting a fork in it. Like, put a fork in the things that make you mad, you're going to start talking and giving me words and giving me stories. And as you're talking, my awareness is going to focus on your voice tone, where you're going with your eyes, all your nonverbal stuff, because that's where the communication is centered in your being, and that's where 90% of the change is going to take place. And maybe, I don't know, it just sounds like it fits too easy, though. But after the age of 30, since it's only a 9-to-1 shot that you're going to make any lasting behavioral change anyway, just the stats, I wonder if that has to do with the 93-to-7 split with verbal and nonverbal communication, that we get more verbal as we get older and less nonverbal. And so our brain is not tuned into our body. We get more exo to ourselves, and we get stuck in language instead of in the body part of it. And we get stuck more in learned or acquired language rather than the language we're born into, which is more body language. I wonder if that's really something that I'm going to slide the little Cinderella shoe on, but it seems like it. So, all right. Well, 8:25, and now for a tooth story.
Oh, God. I have to just really... I'm going to cringe the whole time. Ugh, the whole tooth
what?
Thing. Just the
so
whole...
you've had your share of dental hygiene
in
your life. Oh,
man. It
well,
is miserable.
What's the last time you had to go through something like this?
I think when I had the roots removed from two root canals that didn't work, and they had to go in and dig them out of my jawbone.
Oh, that's great.
That was nice. Yeah, that
yeah,
was
I
got to
see
that
all that up close and personal today. Well, just take any, like, if you break down any experience, okay? The tooth was diagnosed as having a problem back in June, right? Through an x-ray. That's exo. A tool diagnosed it. Now, me, in my self-regulatory behavior, referring to myself as an onto, said, heh, deal with it later. I got other things to do. It wasn't to the point where I couldn't manage it. Over the weekend, this past weekend, it got to that point. And I went through all my checks and balances the way I regulate myself with my lifestyle choices and all the things I do to take care of things like this. And I said, by Wednesday, I said, today, I need help. So at that point, I had to philo and call my dentist, who, of course, was on vacation. He's going away. So he wasn't there. So I had to go see a new dentist, which means I had to philo again, but from a significantly less familiar standpoint. I had to make new friends today. Mandatory new friends called the dentist over in the other part of town. So when I get there, they stick me in the waiting room by myself for 45 minutes. 45 minutes with pain. They didn't come out to see how I was doing.
That's
didn't
rotten.
Ask if I was done with the form. Because they don't care. That was the XO part of the office that said, you're a new guy. You're filling out forms. We leave you alone. So I was getting the vibe of the office. My eco spider sense was tingling. Going, do I really trust this place? Because I'm here 45 minutes. So I took the opportunity to say, I took the high road, and I said, wow. This is 45 minutes that no one can call me, no one can bug me, no one can disturb me. So I just did my little somatic little meditation, a little figure eight in my body, and I prepared my body for what was going to happen. I said, look, I was reappraising, which is an emotional strategy, means that before you go over this hill, I'm only going to warn you once. It's not peaceful over there. So I was looking through the door I had to go through, saying, when that door opens, it's going to be the pain show. So I had to get myself geared up for that. So by the time they opened the door, I was like, yes, let's do it. Let's go. And, of course, they had to do their x-ray. And, oh, my God, the infection is spreading into Wyoming. You know, they made a big dramatic thing out of it. And, of course, the dentist comes in. And if you've never noticed this, with any new practitioner that you work with or anyone that's got any kind of authority, when they have bad news to give you, they stand to your left. When they have good news to give you, they stand to your right. It's a habit. I don't know if they know they have it. But it's universal. I do it when I'm talking to clients. And I notice, oh, God, I'm standing over here. You know, and it's just, why do they do it? It's just a way to match up brains. When you stand to someone's left, you're standing in their past, and you're talking to their future. So, and the other way around, too. So when you're standing in the future talking to the past, you give them good news, reassuring news. So just by shifting your attention to the right or left of another person, you can get that message across subliminally, or you can literally do it like this guy did. So he said, that's got to come out. That tooth is dead. And we went back and forth for a minute about, you know, I'm like the Indian rug trader trying, well, how much for this and how much for that? And he's like, he's not used to that. And I told him, I said, look, I this is the way I deal with it. And so I said, all right. At a certain point, I just said, I grabbed his little pocket of his coat and I said, open my mouth. I said, cut me, Mick. And, of course, at that point, he had enough of the eco because he'd seen my Soma Space shirt. And inquired about what that was about. And he goes, so you're I say you're in practice, in your chiropractic practice. Do you like that? I said, no. Frankly, I don't. I don't like dealing with clients like this. And I said, that's why I'm doing all this other stuff. And he said, oh. And so it was like he was trying to bond with me. And, you know, he's a dentist. He actually was a pretty talented eco-dentist. But he was eco being an exo, which is almost like when, like, a little kid puts on their mom's shoes and walks around. It wasn't working. And he's tapping his toe while he's taking my tooth out, you know, grooving to the excision, you know. And then I had this onto dental assistant who was giving me, like, monosyllabic answers to everything. So how long have you been doing this job? 11 years. So do you ever see a tooth as bad as this? All the time. Dental neglect is my life, you know. So it was very kind of like, it was like they wanted to put out this very kind of calm, reassuring kind of vibe, but it was coming across kind of exo-y. So I kept kind of livening it up. So I started singing like tooth songs when they were you know, like, you know, and the hills of November came early, you know, when they're drilling and stuff, and I'm humming the song. Hey, Calypso! I was like doing like the pirate thing. And boy, did they drill in there. And when they took the tooth out, they both went almost like the, oh my. They were like, they held the tooth up like they'd won a trophy. And the roots are hanging. I still got the tooth sitting right here. It's a molar. It's a giant tooth. And they held it up like Eureka, like we got the fish, you know. And just as they did that, the pocket that the tooth was in let loose a deluge, what's that called, a geyser of blood and other materials that splashed onto the poor dentist's hand and glove and up onto his little glasses there.
Oh, man.
And he politely put his hand on my shoulder and said, please close your mouth. As my mouth was full of blood. And I went, and it felt good, because I'm under all the Novocaine, all the other drugs, and this warm blood is, wow. So he looks at the x-ray, comes back to me, and he says, okay, now I'm going to clean the wound. And he's scraping along. It's like, you know, this is the total exo feel. He's scraping the inside of my tooth, you know, and you hear that.
Come on.
Everything is, yeah, well, I'm getting a little eco here. You're hearing all the side effects, and you realize he's scraping bone. And he was scraping the floor. And he said he stopped. Because it was very close to the canal that runs under the teeth, called the mandibular canal, which means that if it got in there, then the infection would have got into my whole body. So it was very close. So to sum it up, sews me up, gives me a prescription for antibiotics, which I patently refused. No. Relief system. I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And then he painted a picture of me on a table going, clear. And he says, look, for 21 stinking pills, you can eat some yogurt and do all your holistic stuff, and it's not going to matter. Just to support your immune system is what I'm trying to say. Don't take this lightly. This is a serious infection. So I nodded my head dutifully like a little philo, ran off to the aforementioned pharmacy and went through that. $63 for 21 pills.
Yep.
How do these people afford their medications?
Yeah, that's cheap.
That's what the guy said.
Yep.
You got off cheap.
Yep.
I said, geez, I'm going to go back where the ding-dongs are. That's much more tasty and affordable for me.
Yes.
So, which is the reason why I got the teeth I have in the first place. All right, so 833, we have buried the tooth, 646-478-4847. And I wanted to give, because we're bridging. Right now we're still called Naked Soma, Riff on This. And we will continue to be called this show until we have our product lineup and we can transition to our new show. So why don't you give them a taste of the new show theme music?
Oh, I'll try that right now. Let's see.
See if we can get that out there.
All right. We're
going to be shifting gears here. I just want to get you guys into the mood.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea. And he told us of
his life. Sure
I did.
You want me to try it a little louder?
Yeah.
It's very low. Hold on.
In the town where I was born,
better?
Lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told...
Hold on, it's playing it twice now. Stop that. Just a minute. Damn, exo crap. All right, here we go.
All right. And a one.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told... of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed on to the sun till we found a sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarines.
I can't have you dancing.
We'll have a much better version. I ain't dancing tonight, believe it.
No.
We'll have a much better version of that prepared with all kinds of bells and whistles. And maybe we'll throw some other stuff in there. But for the most part, the theme of the show is going to be more centered on you, your lives, how you're dealing, how you're feeling, and how you're relating to other people. So we can start to do a little more of this kind of interactive Fraser Crane stuff up here in the, on the Blog Talk Radio. We're going to try and get some guests on here, discuss some of these topics. We want to make this much more of a open environment so that you guys can start learning about the things that we stumble across a lot. And it's not something, like I said, that's going to be in the front line of the news. But we did find that thing a couple of days ago on sociofeedback. And it's something that I hope gets some traction because it pulls up a significant thing about the nature of relationships and how necessary they are for our well-being. So, let's see if I... Do you have it handy? I can find it.
No. Nope.
What good are you?
No, I don't know. Not handy. Sure. Eco.
Yes, I understand. Well, let's see. I think that was Monday. Nope.
Yeah. I don't think it was Monday.
No?
Tuesday?
No. I'll find it the other way. Was it in Time Magazine? Yeah, there it is. Sociofeedback.
Oh, good. Okay.
Sexual chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Getting over there. So, you know, like I said, these stories, once you sort of have like an eye for them, you see them a lot. And this one was out in Time Magazine, I guess it was last week. I don't know. Still booting up over here. And once you start connecting the dots and realizing that, you know, sort of your baseline assumptions about yourself and reality and your relationships and all that stuff starts to get a little ooey. You take a simple experience like I had today with my tooth and you go, well, what does that mean in the metaphor of existence here? So here's sociofeedback, and it's kind of a there's little tanto sentences they have. Get married, attend church, join the Elks Club, or even a jacuzzi club, whatever, so long as you keep in touch. Such behavior may be the best prescription for a long and healthy life.
Huh.
Yeah, their opinion matters.
Huh.
Always put a survey up. Some epidemiologist called Lisa Berkman in the University of California, Berkeley, a liberal school, put this research out. She studied the lives of 7,000 people between the ages of 30 and 69 over a 9-year period, found that the extroverts are more likely to live longer than the introverts. All right? Who tend to be overweight, smoke, shun, exercise, and drink too much. And that goes back to your 9-to-1 odds of changing your behavior at 30. Right?
Uh-huh.
While the outgoing types are inclined to stay in better physical shape, Berkman concluded that their gregariousness, for unknown reasons, has much to do with the fact that they are more resistant to heart and circulatory disease, cancer, and stroke, and less inclined to suicide, which brings to mind Spinoza's observation, man is a social animal. And the new book by James Lynch, The Broken Heart, The Medical Consequences of Loneliness. So there's your idea there. And there was another one that talked about frenemies and things like that, is that when you go through life, you have a lot of conflict with other people that I always think people, after the age of 30, the two things that kill you are agoraphobia, which is again, and then you get afraid, again, and the other one is agititis, which is inflammation caused by agita, immune system. Oh, come on.
Oh, man.
It's a client calling in during the show.
Of course.
Yeah. I should just put her on the air.
That would be really funny. She'll probably
kill
you.
Yeah, but I can't because I have you there, right? Maybe I could because you called me. No, you didn't call me. No, we're in the thing.
No, you just made one call. You just should have hit star 70.
Yeah, let's see.
Oh, jeez. Why do I have a feeling I'll be on here alone?
You there? Yeah, she's gone. She's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gave up. That would have been fun, taking an appointment over the phone. During the show. You would have heard her. Well, she's on, though, too. That would have been a great call.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But the thing is, like I said, the source of a lot of people's irritation in their life are these unbalanced relationships. And here they're saying that the more extroverted you are, the more outgoing and gregarious you are, the more people sort of fluid you are, the longer you live and the healthier you stay. So that's why the phylums inherit the earth, because they can carry a lot of noise in their lives because they put out such a broad signal that they're open to interacting with other people. And, you know, you get into introversion and extroversion, it's like we're wheeling out the old classic psychology labels. But really, it just means being receptive. You don't have to be, you know, greeting people at the gates of Disney World to be counted as an extrovert. I know a lot of extroverts that are tough shells to get in. But for the most part, what it's saying is be receptive. Be open to the possibility that the next person you meet has something helpful to give you. And that keeps you in that, sort of like the way you work it biologically, cell-to-cell communication creates good tissue health, and then tissue-to-tissue, good organ health, and then organ-to-organ, good system health, and system-to-system, good organism health. So all that scaling up and scaling down goes down to those smaller interactions that are networked together. And that's why, you know, with universal semantics, everything comes down to eye contact. When your eyes make contact with an object, when your eyes make contact with your own reflection, when your eyes make contact with an environment, you know, sometimes just seeing a blue sky is enough to give you energy. So if you don't have a blue sky available, you can think of one. And then finally, you know, if you interact with other people and the eyes look back at you and the bonding begins, the energy transfer begins, this is where life is really kind of renewed. This is where you get the Soma Sutra, you know, stuff from. And that's why when you get bogged down in small talk and you stay there and you never get to deep talk, the relationship gets kind of stagnant. It doesn't keep your interest. And, you know, I had an 84, 85-year-old client today, and her preliminary heart rate variability had absolutely no waves until you get to 0.3, which means that only her respiratory frequencies are working. So everything else was off. Her sensory system was off. Her sympathetic nervous system was off. And her heart rate variability was very low. So she was sitting there at around 60 heartbeats a minute, but hardly any variability in it. Almost like you'd see in someone in delta sleep, and she was just sitting there. So I said, look, I'll wait all week. I won't see a wave like this. And then when we were finished, all of the energy went down towards the sensory system and the sympathetic system. She got more animated because she spent 20 minutes with me, and she got more philo. She's a philo herself. She got more back into, okay, be receptive to other people, because this is someone who spends, and you see a lot with elderly people, they spend a lot of time in isolation, a lot of time away from other people. And these are philos, and it's not healthy for them to be alone. You know, that's why the whole stick the old people on the bus and bring them to Frantic City is a good idea. Even if it means that, you know, they get a little crotchety, it's just the fact that they get to interact with other people's energy, and they're not stuck despite with that sort of isolating, like one cell by itself can't really do much, but when you start getting and pulsing with other cells, you get a dynamic there. And that's what I think, for the most part, is what the sociofeedback stuff is trying to get at, and that's why when you try to study the individual and their behavior separate from their somatic circle, people around them, you don't really get all the information. So I always, like, when it comes to like a thing like this, the symbolic aspect of illness always got me interested when I was coming up the ranks. And maybe you can help me out, because psychologists and symbols is like, you know, it's like their favorite cereal. There should be a cereal for that, you know, symbols. Just a bunch of archetypes in the box.
That could be fun.
Yeah, we could create that. Yeah, that'd be kind of good. We'd make it all marshmallows and no oats.
It'll have to be gluten free for sure.
Well, we can have a gluten free version for you.
Thanks.
Yeah, gluten free. So anyway, when something happens to you, think of the language of like cold shoulder and, you know, red hot with anger and things like that. All those things you use in your language that are describing the body. It's really describing the energy that manifested that particular expression the body gave you. And all the low coherence expressions, all the negative feedback your body gives you through the form of symptoms and also conflicts with other people and also crises in your life and also baggage in your shadow and all the things that put you on the couch, they're all tethered to that thing we talked about before, which when you lose the reference point of your own identity, you start to slip into these fragmented parts of your persona that are not organized yet. And the reason why they're not organized is because you didn't build a healthy soma growing up. You're only stuck in your closed identity. And that's why the second half of your life is all about having the secondary domains, the things that are not natural to you, be supportive of the things that are natural to you. And most people growing up, all they hear is what's wrong with them. All they know is what their weaknesses are. So they build up a lot of robust behaviors that are avoid-based, and ignore based. They're not approach based. They're all about avoiding doing something wrong, getting in trouble. Avoid, and ignoring a lot of new information because they don't want to know any more information about themselves because usually the information is bad news. So they get a lot of triggers and a lot of sort of like body-based walls that says, I don't want to go there because it's going to be bad. And just like I reappraise by going in the room and getting the help from the dentist, you have to reappraise those strategies and start saying, okay, it's going to be tough to break these habits initially. Just like it was tough to get in that chair today and get that tooth yanked out of my freaking jaw. It's not impossible to heal from those things over time if you give yourself the window to do it, if you give yourself the strategy that, okay, if I just get past this initial part, then the rest of it will line up on the other side of it. And that's where most behavioral change comes down to. The payload is always in the front. You have to really get past the inertia that's built up in your life that says, I will not allow you to change. You build up an exified structure to keep your dysfunction contained to that or compartmentalized into that part of your life. And when you chip away and break that structure and come up with a creative way of expressing yourself, yeah, it can be a waterfall. It can be a real revelation of how many things bust loose from that one brick you just pulled. But this is where, like I said, this is where most people don't have the cojones to do it because it involves destroying the parts of yourself that you've glorified, which is mostly dysfunctional. And that's what most people try to improve themselves. You can't improve yourself until you destroy yourself. And by destroying yourself, I mean by breaking those neurological connections, those they call them networks in your brain, those associations you make that take you into a closed identity, that take you back into a separate part of your world where you're distinct from everything around you, that basically entombs you in a very cloudy, very self-referencing loop, almost like redialing the wrong number over and over and over again, expecting to get something different. And because that's the safe mode, that's like Windows on safe mode, once you're in it, the only thing you can do is reboot. You can't do much in Windows in safe mode except get to the desktop. So you sort of arrive in your day, but there's not much you can do in your day because everything's regimented because you're in safe mode. You don't have your drivers. And that's why I see a lot of people just, coming up with a lot of strategies to basically not face that reality, and it leads to a lot of long-term problems. And you know, this stuff comes out about Owen Wilson now. He had a huge cocaine habit.
Mm-hmm.
Cocaine. I had Novocaine today.
Oh, yes, you did.
We should play that song today. I was actually humming that when he was getting the needle out.
And I was
singing The Needle and Damage Done, too.
You must be so much fun to work on.
I was sitting there with gauze in my mouth going, I sing the needle and the damage done. Everyone. And he's going, and he's sitting there rinsing things out, and he's tapping his foot to my humming, and I'm going,
God.
It's fun. But then, you know, then when I sang cocaine, when he got the needle out, I was I was making up lyrics at that point. She don't ride, she don't drive, cocaine. And they do this thing now where they jiggle your cheek before they put the needle in.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a new method. Or it's like the 100th monkey of dentists. One dentist did it by accident once, probably had the hiccups, and hey, it didn't hurt him. And they all started doing it.
Yep.
But for me, my cheeks are tight. So he's flicking my cheek, and he's hitting the sore part of my gum. So every time he's hitting it, I'm slapping his leg. Stop that, I'm saying. Just stick the needle in. He goes, all right. Needle goes in. He starts wiggling the cheek, and I did a Bugs Bunny. I go, that's better. And at that point, the assistant had to take a 180 because she was about to, I think, either throw up or laugh in her mouth, one of the two. She was pretty much not entertained with my presence there. It was a very upscale kind of place, and I just didn't belong. Me and my fancy little swirling shirt. So.
Hey, that's a classy shirt right there, because I have the same one.
Yeah, well, you know how hard it is when everyone in the entire office reads the I am nowhere as I am nowhere.
Oh, boy. Then you got to run.
Yeah, all of them are incoherent. I am nowhere? What does that mean? I mean, people are stopping me in the hallway. I am nowhere. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. There's a lot of strange people there. The dentist office, for the most part, they're sort of like funeral parlors without the hors d'oeuvres and stuff down the hall. Everyone talks in that hushed kind of golf talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't just go, hey, how you doing? We're here getting drilled and stuff.
No.
Not like when you go to a chiropractic office. From my, you know, right down the hall, there was a guy, Dr. San Filippo, and with the door closed, you heard, like, you know, reggae music and people screaming, and it's a party. Yeah, I'm used to that. All right, so we are ambling up to the 10 to 9. Again, we have a no-call show. You listeners out there, for lack of a better word, you could call us here, and we can talk. It's a radio show. It goes both directions.
Yep.
But that's for next week. Now we have to do the somascopes.
That's right.
Yes. So we are in the first week of the somatic fall, which ends, oddly, on December 1st, weekend after Thanksgiving. Yeah, the seasons are offset because the way the moons are this year, we're biting up these 12 weeks, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks before the actual seasonal change, which every time you see an offset thing like that, in terms of the way the lunar cycles are going and the solstices and equinoxes are going, you've got a lot of gap between the way the moon is regulating our emotions and the way the heart is regulating our behavior. So you have a lot of sort of like leeway and sort of a, I don't know, a credit card, so a universal credit card to sort of screw up and then patch up things before things change. So you got till the 20th when the season changes to prepare for the summer, but the fall has started somatically this week with our exophase beginning on Tuesday, yesterday, and it's going to be an interesting week because we have to deal with both the end of the summer outside ourselves and the beginning of the fall inside ourselves. So you get a lot of things conflicting between your circulation, which is more summer-oriented, and your immune system, which is more fall-oriented. So everything comes down to lymph. You must be a lympho, a lymphomaniac. And the healthiest thing you can do for your lymph is move. We were talking about last week about dancing. It's much more about having rhythmic activity to do on every single day, but basically this time of the year especially, because you're priming your immune system for when the temperature drops outside and we stop getting into the you know, the humid air, and we start getting more sensitivity to that because the filtered air is coming, the cold air is coming, and that means that, of course, ragweed season, all the other fun stuff that comes this month. So your immune system is really dependent on your motor system and how well you're moving rhythmically within yourself. So that's why we tend to get a little impulsive at this time of the year. And you watch out for that. So it's the impulse to move and the impulse to relax that you want to really watch. And then now going across the domains, as you, if you start with the impulse to do anything, okay, and that begins the cycle. So when you start with the spring in the year, that's the phylo, that's the beginning. So the impulse to initiate is always phylo. They're always reaching out, trying to bond with their environment, right? So that's the first thing. So the impulse to move, the impulse to breathe, the impulse to talk, all phylo. They never say, babies don't talk, but boy, they have a lot of impulses. Then you have the ontophase when you actually make the forward action and do something. Take an action, take a step, say something, put it out there. That's the rising phase, and that's the summer. Now we're getting into the impulse to relax, which is the fall. That's the eco cue. And then it'll drop to the wickets in the winter, and you'll actually relax, you'll actually stop, you'll actually go through recovery, and that's the exophase when you leave the body to let all the waste materials get out and all the recovery take place, and you ease up, and then you come back again with the impulse to start over again. That's the cycle. So going around the domains, since we're in this kind of fluxy little pocket here, you're going to have a lot of phylos getting mixed signals because they're going to tune into the environment and get, it's still summer, and they're going to tune into their body, and they're going to get, wow, it's fall. So they're going to get an impulse to sort of stop while they're going to get a cue from the outside to go. Sort of like we're all running under a caution flag. It's like life is running under a blinking yellow light for the next 3 weeks, and you have to exercise caution. I love that term, exercise caution. So who does that the best, of course, is going to be the exos. They lead the charge because they're always cautious, and they're always in control. So when they see a blinking yellow light from 100 yards away, they either look for a side street to turn down and avoid it, or they will approach it expecting some eco to fly through going the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always anticipating that the environment is not trustworthy. That's where the exo begins his relationship with the environment. Of course, the eco sees the blinking yellow light and says, speed up. So that's why the ecos pay the biggest penalty this time of the year, and also the transition that happens between the winter and the spring. Same thing for ecos. They were horrible entering the fall and were horrible leaving the winter, the dark cycle. And the Anthos, of course, since they're good at control system work, but they're not good at inhibiting themselves, Anthos will tend to sort of lean toward the bias of the environment first to say, that's me out there, the summer. So they're going to be much, because the summer is their season, so they're not going to let go of that. So what happens is their body is telling them to slow down, but mentally they're saying, no, just get one more punch in. So it's sort of like the end of the conversation with an Anto is going to be difficult to bite off and say, okay, it's done, because they're going to come back in the room with the end another thing. So it's sort of like the conversation ends, and you are standing in the room by yourself, and you just kind of count to 10, and the aforementioned Anto will come back in and go, and another thing. That'll happen a lot the next 3 weeks.
Oh, come on.
So just be prepared. Again, it's all about being impulsive. The Anto cannot resist the end another thing. Coming in, wagging the finger, after the conversation's over, after everything's cool, and another thing will happen. So just prepare for that. So the Ecos, of course, are the redheaded stepchild getting beat on. The Exos are going to be the ones that are going to snake through this the easiest, so they're going to have the bias to do it anyway. The Philos are going to kind of fall in the middle, and they're going to kind of do some impulsive stuff, and then they're going to know to be afraid, because you can inhibit an Anto with enough preparation. But it's those Philo. But those Antos, you just got to be prepared. They're going to have a little more to say than they think, and then you got to kind of leave a little gap. So if they blow up at you, you just say, okay, they're in transition, and then they're not as coherent as they can be. And, you know, they sort of sped up to the yellow light, looked around, then sped through it. That's kind of the way it goes. So we're going to have that happening from now until the 20th, but when we shift gears next week and we're coming from the Philo perspective, we're going to be looking to other people for that cue, for that yellow light. So the caution flag is going to be in the relationships, but right now it's actually in the structure of the seasonal transitions and the way the lunar cycles are going. So these are independent of society, independent of even humankind, and so we have to take that into consideration. So, all right, so that's my yap this week on the somascopes. So we will wind down. A couple of questions raised, a couple of things came up today with Jeb having his babies.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen with that this fall? We might get into some somatic parenting and talk about that, how you can nurture your nature and all that kind of stuff as we make the transition to the new show title and framework and all that. Probably more towards the end of this month. We'll probably do a couple more shows like this and see if we can line up some guests and things like that. And like I said, the biggest thing we need is your contribution. We need you to email us and tell us what you think, or to jump on the air and join us out here, you know, and talk to us a little bit. All right, so why don't we throw it over to Professor Val for our quote of the week, and then we'll wrap up for another show, Naked Soma.
All right. Well, I was thinking about who to quote and what to quote, and I thought since we were going through some changes that I would find a change quote, and then I found an exo, Charles Darwin. So Charles Darwin said, "It is not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change."
Okay.
So,
well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and we are responding
to
change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about receptivity, which is exactly what you need to have this time of the year to let the sun shine in. So, okay.
That's right.
All right. That's a, you know, that said, that again, Darwin isn't my biggest, you know, I'm not a big fan of Darwin's model, but he says things like that because he was, even though he was exo, was all get out. He was like I say, he's in the exo Hall of Fame. Anyone who classifies that many things, is that he understood the bigger system. And if you understand the bigger system you're working in, on whatever scale that you're focusing on, there's always a bigger game. And you say, well, how does my actions today impact the bigger game? If you're lining yourself up with the bigger game, no matter what it is in your life, you're always going to be rewarded because you're lining up with more coherence instead of just the local coherence, the local weather. You're tuning into the satellite show and getting a little more heat that way. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, so you skate on your own. Next week is Philo time, and we're going to get into some more stuff with that, maybe some more baby talk. So until then, for Dr. Jeb and Professor Val and Dr. Mark, travel light through the darkness.
Hey, Mark. I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I'm completely fucked. Cole will not allow me to say anything again on my good effects of dry that says I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I can't get cut in the pool of my hair. It says I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I'm fucked.
I had to do it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.